18 months ago, there was a very fine person who used to attend our classes. Whenever he could, he'd come, and he'd come after a long day's work, and sometimes he'd sit here fighting sleep, sometimes he'd ride his bike in from the other end of Jerusalem in the rain, in the cold, but he really wanted to learn. And on this day, a year ago, he took a tour group down in Dahab to see the Blue Hole. And after the tour group went down, for whatever reason, he went down again alone. And we don't know if he had a heart attack down there or something else happened. But he never came up again. And his name was Reuven Dov Bera Ezrachi. He was a Ger Tzedek from Poland. And today, a year ago, was his passing, his Geretzeit. We're going to do, based on the day he was buried, it took a few days till they recovered the body and brought it to Israel. So the Geretzeit is next week, and Mezrat Hashem on Sunday we'll have a special class. We'll try to take a few minutes to discuss things that are relevant, but I can't help mentioning tonight, which is actually the night of his passing, the Dov's Minute that we learn. The students of the Machon, we all agreed that we had 1 minute of our learning in memory of Dov, because Dov passed away without a family. And, he became a ger, and he never merited to marry. So who's going to say Kaddish for him? Who's going to do things for his merit? So we had a minute of learning for his merit at the end of our learning. That's Dov's minute. Hashem should bless Reuven Dov Ber Ben Avraham, and his neshama should have an aliyah tonight, and we will continue doing things in his merit, Bezrat Hashem. I haven't had a chance to look at the news. I don't usually look at the news. Did we go into Gaza today? We didn't go into Gaza today. But we do have missiles falling on us. And there are Jews all along the south that are being bombarded as we speak. Our learning should be a merit to protect our soldiers and protect our people down in the south and wherever they are. Chazal tell us, David HaMelech said, "Umdot ayu raglenu b'sharayich Yerushalayim." Our feet were standing at your gates, Jerusalem. Chazal say, "Umdot ayu raglenu." David HaMelech said the verse, we have to break the verse in two. "Umdot ayu raglenu," our feet stood. When we went to war, we were able to stand up to the enemy. Bisharayich Yerushalayim, in your strength, you gates of Jerusalem. The gates of Jerusalem is a reference to the Batei Midrash in Jerusalem that learned Torah, that David HaMelech declared the strength that we have at war stems from the gates of Jerusalem that are busy learning Torah. So our learning tonight should give strength to our soldiers who are out on the front and to our soldiers wherever they may be. And right now every Jew who is living along the south is acting as a soldier. Chazal taught us that the border cities, they have a special role. They're the ones that are on the border, and they're suffering from the enemy. So they're all soldiers. Approximately 15 years ago, I hadn't yet decided to make Aliyah, and a friend of mine and I, we were both studying America as a Rav, and he said to me, we both lived in America together, and we were learning Chavrusa. And he said, "You're thinking of living in Israel?" So I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Buses are blowing up around here. And the death rate on the streets, there are accidents, people are dying." So I said to him, "People die in New York also. There are shootings on the subway, and there are accidents on the streets in New York also. And the difference," and I told him then, I said, if a person... We were then just starting yeshiva. I said to him, if a person, God forbid, loses a child here in Israel, he knows that the mere fact that his child walked the streets of Israel was protecting the land of Israel for the Jewish people. Every day we're living here. Here in Machon Meir, here in Kiryat Moshe, we are fulfilling Yishuv HaAretz. You don't have to live out in Charasha or Neriya or anywhere else to fulfill Yeshuv Haaretz. The fact that you live here, you are living in the land of Israel, you are maintaining the land of Israel for the Jewish people, that is Yeshuv Haaretz. Every minute that you're walking the streets here, that's Yeshuv Haaretz. If a person, God forbid, loses a son to a car accident or to a shooting in New York, what's he have to say for himself? For what purpose was the kid walking that street on that day? Here, wherever you're walking, there's a purpose. We're holding on to it. Why are they shooting at us? They want us out. And why are we here? Because we're supposed to be here. So Hashem should give strength to all the people all along the southern border. And they're fighting our war. The truth is that it's all of our war. Right now they're on the front lines, but the war is a war of the Jewish people, and Hashem should give us all strength. We should quickly see the time when we're not being shot at and things are peaceful here in Israel. Parashat Vayigash. We've reached the climax. Brother against brother, right? Yaakov, Yosef, Yosef, Yehuda. Now, Yosef has sent his men. They called the brothers back, and they tell him, "Why'd you steal the goblet? Okay, guys, we'll let you guys off the hook. But the little one, that 30-year-old, Binyamin, he's staying with us. He was caught as a thief, and you guys go home." And Yehuda steps forward. Vaigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda goes towards him, and now he's going to speak to him and try to persuade him to let them have Binyamin. He says, I'll be a slave instead of him. Let him go. What case does Yehuda have? What's he going to say? He didn't steal it. He was caught red-handed. So Yehuda has two choices. Yehuda could say, I don't care for your justice system. I don't care for you, and I don't care for your country. And if you guys want to mess with me, then I'm going to take you to war, and we're going to have a world war right now. Or else Yehuda could beg, and Yehuda could say, my father's a very old man. He suffered a lot in his lifetime. You can't do this to me. Do me a favor, please. I beg you. I'll do whatever you want, but let the kid go. Yehuda has two choices, and Chazal say that either he did one of the two, or he did both. There are different opinions in Chazal. What was Yehuda's approach to Yosef? At the end, Yosef can't retain himself, and he removes everyone from the room. He weeps, and he reveals himself to the brothers. And he tells them, don't feel bad that you sold me down here, because you see, it was all for the better. It was all for the good, that there's still 5 years left of the famine, and because of everything that happened, I'm here for you, and I'm here for the world. And he gives them gifts, and they hug, and they kiss, and they send back wagons to bring Yaakov down to Mitzrayim, and Yaakov rejoices at hearing that Yosef's still alive. And Yaakov, before going down to Mitzrayim, he goes to Be'er Sheva, he offers sacrifices, and Hashem tells him, don't be scared, I'll be with you. And Yosef will place his hands on your eyes. Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim, he meets with Yosef. Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim with 70 people. The Jewish people number 70. And within 4 generations, they're going to number 2 million. He sends Yehuda ahead of him to set up a base medrash, to set up things in the land of Goshen. And the Jews are going to be separate. They're going to live in their own territory. They come to Paro. They tell him, we've come here just because of the famine. We want to be here for a short time until the famine ends. And Yaakov comes before Paro. Paro sees he looks like a very old man. He asks him, old man, how old are you? Yaakov tells him, I'm not that old. I'm only 130 years old. But my life's been difficult. That's why I look so old. And Yaakov blesses Paro. And Yosef establishes his family. The Egyptians lose all their wealth to Yosef. They have to sell everything in order to buy food. There's no food to be had. And Yosef ultimately purchases all of the real estate in Mitzrayim. And he makes Paro a very, very wealthy king. And he sets up a tax system that they only have to pay 20% tax to Paro. 20% of their income goes to Paro, everything else they could keep. And so Egypt will thrive. I mean, it's an intelligent way of taxing the people. They give up. The people say, we can't do this.
We need you, Yosef. We'll all be your slaves. Feed us and take care of us. And Yosef says, no, I'm not running the country that way. I'll tell you where to live and I'll rearrange Egypt and we'll set things up well. But at the end of the day, in order for us to be productive, every person has to have something in it. Communism won't work. Yosef tells them, no, you guys have to be owners, but I will set the taxes at a certain rate, but you have to have a vested interest in making this work, so you're going to get 4/5 of the produce. And the parasha ends with the Jewish people flourishing in the land of Goshen in Egypt. So now let's go over the parasha with some more depth. There are fascinating midrashim in the beginning of this parasha. Every person should learn them, so you can tell them over to your children. If you want, almost every year before this year, we did the midrashim. Maybe we'll do a little bit of the midrashim. Yehuda steps forward to Yosef. And the Midrash says Yehuda was ready to go to war. Yehuda says, this isn't happening. So we have a situation where the ox is going to take on the lion. You know, Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Yehuda is a lion. That was what was on his flag. That was what he was blessed with. And Yosef is Bechol Shoro. He is a chosen ox. He's got quite some might. So now they're going to face off. And Yehuda tells Yosef, look here. My grandmother was detained in this country for one night. When my grandmother was detained for one night, you know what happened to Pharaoh? Your king, Pharaoh, you know what God did to him? You want to hold my brother as your hostage? You want to hold him as a slave? You know what's going to happen to you? You know, my father, he just said a curse. He didn't even touch his mother. My father just said, whoever stole those truffles will die. And his mother died from that. You're going to mess with him? If you're going to get me upset, I'm going to curse you. You know, two of us, he points to Shimon and Levi, and he says, two of us took on the whole city of Shechem and destroyed it because of one girl that was captured. And here, we don't have faith in you, Yosef. He doesn't know it's Yosef. Tzofnas Panel. We know that here in Egypt they kidnap boys and do improper things with them. We know what's going on here in Egypt. You're taking him, we know what you want to do with him. Well, for a girl, we destroyed a whole city. You think we're going to let you get away with taking our brother? Our brother is a holy one. This is Binyamin. This isn't just one of the tribes. This is the one in his section. We're going to erect the temple. The Holy of Holies is going to be in his section. You know, Paro makes promises and he doesn't keep his promise. You're just like him. Paro runs after little boys. You're just like him. Paro's king and you're second. Well, let me tell you something. I come from a country where my father's the king and I'm second in command over there. If I take out my sword, I'm warning you, I'm going to begin with you and end up with Paro. I'm killing the whole country. So you better let my brother go. So Yehuda's standing up there and he's standing up to Yosef. Yehuda says, and I want you to know, you know why I care so much? Because I took responsibility for the kid. I told my father, I'm bringing him back. So Yosef tells him, why didn't you take responsibility for your other brother? I know you sold one of your brothers. And then you told your father, wild animals ate him. Go tell your father the same story. You sold the other brother. So what do you mean you're so responsible? So Yehuda says, how could I go back home without the kid? Yosef says, you know what, Yehuda? You put together your thoughts. Let's hash it out. So Yehuda tells Naphtali, go run through Egypt, tell me how many main streets there are in Egypt. How many marketplaces there are in Egypt. Naphtali, Ayalash Shlucha, is like a young ram. He could run swiftly. He runs through Egypt, comes back and tells Yehuda, there are 12 marketplaces. Yehuda says, okay, I'll take three, I'll destroy three marketplaces. Now you have to understand, a marketplace in those days meant that there was an average of 2 million people a day in that marketplace. That's what a marketplace means in Chazal. A marketplace is, you're talking about like in Rome. In order for it to be considered a marketplace, it has to have 600,000 males on an average day. Add to that the women and the children, you're talking about 2 million people. Yehuda says, I'll take on one, I'll take on three, you can take one each. Yosef says to Yehuda, listen here, Yehuda isn't Shechem. If you destroy Mitzrayim, you destroy the world. Because the whole world needs Mitzrayim right now. Yehuda says, you've been playing games with us. He came, he told us we're spies. Then you're telling us we stole your goblet. I swear by my father. You, who do you swear by? You swear by the wicked Paro. I'm warning you. I'm going to take my sword out. I will fill Egypt with carcasses. Yosef tells him, you take out your sword. I'm going to wrap it around your neck. Yehuda tells him, I'm going to open my mouth. I'm going to swallow you alive. Yosef tells him, you open your mouth, I'm going to put a stone in it. Yehuda tells him, what am I going to tell my father? So Yosef tells him very simple. Tell him that when a bucket drops in a pit, so the rope goes right after it. Tell him his mother, why'd she die? Because she stole. So he went in his mother's footsteps. He stole too. And that's why he was taken hostage. Yehuda tells him, you know, you're a liar. You're not a fair judge. Yosef tells him, the only unfair thing I can see here is that you took your brother and sold him. Yehuda says, you know, the fire of Shechem is burning in me. I'm starting to think that you're taking him for improper reasons. You're taking him just like my sister was abducted in Shechem for improper reasons. And I'm starting to get upset. You know, maybe I'm going to do to you here like we did to Shechem. Yosef says to him, listen, before you're so sure that it's the fire of Shechem that's burning in you, why don't you think back? Do you have a right to be so zealous about prostitution? I sense a certain fire that was within you not so long ago that wasn't so proper. Why don't you check yourself first before you assume that there's prostitution here and that's what you're so upset about? Yehuda says, you know, I'm getting upset and nothing's going to get in my way. Yosef says, I'll get in your way. I'll break your anger. Yehuda says, I'm going to go out and paint the marketplaces of Egypt with blood. Yosef says, you guys are good painters. Your whole life you've been painting. You took your brother's garment, you painted it with blood, and you said, oh, he was gored, he was killed by wild animals. Now you decide to destroy Mitzrayim? Yehuda sees that he's not going to win this argument. He turns to his brothers and says, guys, let's devise a plan. We're destroying Egypt. Yosef sees that that's it. He has seconds before the destruction begins, and that's when Yosef has to start talking to Yehuda. That's one medrash. There's another medrash that says that Yehuda got upset. Yosef sent his son Menashe, who grabbed Yehuda. There were stones standing before Yosef, boulders. Yehuda went over to a stone and kicked it, and it turned into sand. So Yosef sent his son Menashe, and he did the same. So Yehuda took a step back. Wait a second, I'm not used to seeing such power. Where'd that come from? Yehuda tells his brother something strange here. Shimon says, yeah, when they said they're going to put Shimon in jail, so the brother said, show us a guard that can handle Shimon. So Yehuda sends his son Menashe, and he puts Shimon in a headlock. And Shimon can't budge. The brothers tell him, why don't you brush him off? And Shimon says, I can't. Something's weird here. So the brothers sense something's different about this king. Something's different. Yehuda is getting upset. So here there's a medrash that says Yehuda started thumping on the floor with his thigh and pounding on his chest. And when Yehuda would get upset, so he'd take a piece of lead and start chewing on it. So Yehuda takes a block of lead and starts chewing. And the medrash said he'd chew on the lead and the lead would start dripping down his chin. And as he'd get upset, his right eye would get all bloodshot and start dripping blood. So Yehuda was standing there facing Yosef chewing lead, and blood is dripping down his eye, mixing with the lead, and he tells Yosef, Yosef, I'm getting upset. And he starts stomping on the floor and roaring like a lion. And when he's roaring, so he has a nephew, Dun's son. Dun is also a lion, right? Dun Guraye. Dun has a son named Hushim, who is deaf. And Hushim was out in Canaan. So his deaf nephew in Canaan hears his uncle roaring. And he says, wait a second, my uncles are in trouble. So the Medrash says, Hushim started roaring from Canaan to Yehuda. And Yehuda started thumping on the floor, and the land of Egypt started shaking. And Yehuda tells Yosef, you know, I'm going to take on Mitzrayim. The Medrash says Yehuda wore layers. I don't remember how many layers the Medrash says. When he'd get upset, so he had a hair on his chest that would stand up like a sword and pierce through all his clothing. So Yehuda's standing there ready to draw his sword. And these are Midrashim that you have to gauge at what age to tell your children. But I don't know of anywhere in Tanakh that you have such fascinating stories like the beginning of our parsha. It's worth going through the Midrashim, take a Midrash says, learn the Midrashim. They're interesting stories. You have to gauge which story fits for which age. And at some point, you have to learn the depth that's behind these stories. Meaning right now, you're hearing these stories for the first time, so I'm telling it to you like a cartoon. But one day, you're going to have to get more depth and evolve beyond this stage and understand that there's more going on here. Chazal tells he was chewing lead. There's something to be discussed about chewing lead. Meaning right now, I'm leaving it as pshat. But we all know that a deaf person doesn't usually hear. And for Yehuda to let out a roar that will be heard by Hushim ben Dan would probably break half the walls on the way to Canaan before it would get there, the vibrations of such a roar. I mean, so obviously the Midrashim over here are telling us fascinating things to illustrate a point, and what the real idea behind it is, so that deserves depth, which we're not going to do right now. Right now we have to be familiar with the pshat. With time we'll get the depth. So Yehuda is going to go forth and speak to Yosef, to Tzafnas Paneach, to this Egyptian king. Why is Yehuda doing all this? Because Yehuda took responsibility. Why did Yehuda take responsibility? Because they were running out of food. And Yaakov said, we have to go back to Mitzrayim. So Yehuda said to Yaakov, you know, we can't go back without Binyamin because we're not going to get any food. Yosef said, the Egyptian king said, don't you dare show your face here without your brother. We're not going without Yosef. And all the brothers agreed with him. Without Binyamin. And then Yehuda said another thing. Yehuda said, I will take responsibility. Anochi elvenu. I will be the co-signer on Binyamin. Miyadit vakshenu. You can demand him from me. Chazal tell us, Bini my son, Shlomo HaMelech said, Imaravta lere'echa. If you were a co-signer for your friend, you messed up. Don't co-sign. You want to help someone out? Help him out. Don't co-sign. Don't you be his co-signer. Because once you're his co-signer, you're in trouble. And if you did co-sign, Chazal say, so Shlomo HaMelech says, Asei zot efo bni v'inatzel. You have to save yourself. Run away like a deer that's being held by someone's hand. And like a bird that's held in a trap, that it doesn't sit around and say, well, let me see what will happen. But rather the bird says, I'm in a trap, I got to get out. So it flutters and it flies and it tries every which way to get out of the trap. When you co-signed at that moment, you entered a trap. Now you're like a bird caught in a net. You got to find the way out. Very often when a person co-signs, so he says to himself, what's so terrible? He took the loan, not me. And right now, who knows? Maybe he'll still pay the loan. That's why Shlomo HaMelech said, no, before your loan is called, get out of it. And an intelligent person doesn't get into it. Don't co-sign. Do whatever you can, but do not co-sign. Shlomo HaMelech said, don't co-sign. Let's ask ourselves, what would have happened had Yehuda not taken responsibility for Binyamin? Would they have died of hunger? Or would Yaakov eventually have said, guys, you got to go. And the brothers would have said, Dad, we'd love to, but we can't show our faces there without Binyamin. And then Yaakov would have said, what'd you do this to me for? And the brothers would have said, we're very sorry. And at the end of the day, Yaakov would have had to give in. Very often in a situation of pressure, like the brothers and Yaakov were in, so we're very tempted to take that step to move towards the other person. Sometimes it could be within a marriage. A couple discusses, should we buy a car? So the wife says, we can't afford it. And the husband says, but it's so difficult to go this way and that way. And we wait for buses in the cold. And the wife says, yeah, but we don't have the money for it. And the gas and the fixing and this and that. And the husband says, yeah, but we'll make ends meet. And they're supposed to give me a raise this year and the bonus. And we'll cover it. And they're arguing back and forth and back and forth. And then the wife has to go out in the rain tonight, who knows where. And the husband says, see, if we'd only have a car. You know, there's a great deal. Our neighbor's willing to sell us his car. But we got to get it tonight because tomorrow he's going to post the sign. And then who knows who's going to get that car before us. Do me a favor. Let me tell him we're going to buy it. Let me just sign the papers with him. And sometimes when there's pressure, so we give in. Chazal say, don't. When something's a mistake, it's a mistake. The pressure doesn't change the fact that it's a mistake. When people co-sign, they kid themselves. They say, why? It'll never come back to haunt me. Chazal say, don't co-sign. If you did, you're in trouble. Yehuda, in that moment of pressure, took responsibility. So he's going to have to step forward now. And Yehuda is going to pay a hefty price for that responsibility. Throughout the years in Egypt, after he dies. And then in the desert. 40 years in the desert, his bones are rattling. He cannot come to rest in the world to come. He wants to enter the heavenly Beis Medrash. He's died. Years have passed. And in heaven they say, you took responsibility. You promised your father everything would turn out right. You took responsibility in this world and the next world. And so Yehuda can't enter the heavenly academy. So Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of his days, prays to Hashem and says, Hashem, you know, we carry 12 coffins out of Egypt. We carry all the tribes. And every tribe, when you carry it, you feel like the body is intact. You don't hear bones rumbling around. Yehuda's coffin, that coffin, every time we move it, we hear the bones rumbling around. We know that there's a problem with his bones. So Moshe Rabbeinu prays to Hashem and says, Hashem, forgive him. Let him enter the academy in heaven. Help him out. Let him succeed in his learning in heaven as well. Think about it. It's been 180 years or something since Yehuda died. And for over 100 years, almost 200 years, Yehuda's suffering in heaven because of this responsibility that he took. Chazal said, don't co-sign. I have a tradition from my great-great-grandfather that you never co-sign. My great-great-grandfather was a rich person in Poland. This was before World War II. And he always said, if you have the money, give the person the money. You don't have the money, don't co-sign, because you won't have the money when they come collecting. And they'll always come collecting on your worst day, when you don't have money to pay your own rent. So if you have the money, give them the money. So whenever people ask me to co-sign, I always tell them, this is my tradition. Whatever money I have in my bank account that I could give you as a loan, I'll gladly give you. I can't co-sign because I can't cover that money. And my tradition is I don't co-sign. So you'll ask, but when you take an apartment, when you rent an apartment, the landlord insists that you get a co-signer. Who's going to co-sign for you? So whenever I rent an apartment, I always tell the landlord, I cannot get co-signers because I will never co-sign for anyone else. This is my tradition. I won't co-sign, but I'll give you 5,000 shekels, 7,000 shekels. How much money do you want? I'll give you cash now. I'll give you that money instead of co-signing. What are you worried? I won't pay you month's rent. A month's rent is 2,000 shekel, 3,000 shekel, whatever the rent is, I'll give you 2 months' rent in advance. So instead of co-signers, I don't want to ask anyone for co-signing because I wouldn't co-sign for them. So I'll give you the money instead. You have your security. You have to figure out ways of getting out of it. Yehuda took on a liability and now he's paying the price. Now Yehuda has to step forward and fight the king of Egypt for his brother. Ephraim, yeah?
The question was,
okay.
And otherwise, I'm not sure I could have got the apartment because my dad wasn't insisting on it.
I understand. But yes, I told you, way out of it.
Yeah, I tried it.
Ah, you tried that. Yeah. Didn't work. Okay, yeah, look, I also had situations where it didn't work. So my parents always told me, don't co-sign for anyone but a brother and a child. What? Oh, your wife. That's not co-signing. It's the same thing. I hope you have the same bank account with your wife and it's not co-signing. You're in it together. That I hope. I mean, that's the way a house should look. I mean, that's not co-signing. You're in it together. But right. That's my approach. I mean, again, you never know when it'll come to haunt you. If you have the money for it, so put up the money. The cosign, no, don't cosign. And don't kid yourself. That's what Shlomo HaMelech was telling us. You should feel like a bird in a cage. You're in the trap the minute you cosign. We kid ourselves. We say, well, who knows, maybe he'll pay. Right now it's not so bad. Maybe I'll have the money to cover it. That's a joke. When it hits you, do you know if you'll have a job? Do you know if you'll be able to cover it? So before you go sign, don't enter the trap. That's what Shlomo HaMelech was warning us. Many times in Mishlei, Shlomo HaMelech says, don't co-sign. So Yehuda steps forward, and Yehuda knows that he has to win. There's no option to lose. So Yehuda is going to beg. And sometimes in life, we have to know how to beg. Shlomo HaMelech says, if you co-sign, you're in trouble. Lechi trapez. Go put yourself down before the lender. Put yourself like dirt and tell him, I beg you, please, let me out of it. Let me find a way out. Let me give you some other security. Uhavrecha. Put your friend up on a pedestal. You got to know how to give him covet. I know you're a great person. I know you're a great guy. I know you're the king of Egypt. Look, Yehuda comes over to Yosef. What does he call him? He says, Adoni, my master. Yehuda's used to being called king. He was second in command in Israel. But when he needs something from Yosef, so he has to know how to put himself down. Sometimes people are too proud. A person has a job, and he refuses to give his boss the honor he owes him. He refuses to give the derech eretz he's supposed to give. It comes back to haunt a person. Shlomo HaMelech said, you're in a situation where you need him, so treat him with derech eretz. Treat him, give him the honor, and put yourself down. That's what Yehuda does. He calls himself a slave. He says, you asked your slaves to bring the kid down. And Yehuda starts begging. He says, my father's a really old man. He suffered so much. The kid is his only child from his favorite wife. He's lost his other kid from him. How could I come and see my father this way? What'll be with my father? He's begging. And his begging works. Yosef concedes. And Yosef asks everyone to leave the room, and then he reveals himself to the brothers. The pasuk describes it as though Yosef could not hold on anymore. Lo yachol Yosef litapek. He couldn't hold back. The pasuk clearly indicates that if only Yosef could, he would have kept it up. Yosef was not interested in revealing himself at this moment. Yosef was brought to his knees by Yehuda. Which leads us to a question, what was Yosef's plan? Why is Yosef doing all of this? And we offered one possible explanation. We offered one explanation that Yosef's thought was that if he and Binyamin are in Mitzrayim, Binyamin can be a servant in his home and they're fulfilling the curse, the promise that Hashem said, Yadoa tedaki ger yezarcha be'eretz lo lahim. Avram already knew that his offsprings would have to be slaves. Yosef figures, if Binyamin is here, servant in my house, so we'll fulfill that decree. The rest of the tribes could live in Israel in peace with my father. They'll miss us. They'll lament that they don't have us. But they won't be slaves in Egypt, and the Jewish people can thrive. That's one possible explanation. There are others. You could listen to last year's class and the years before that class. And we gave different explanations. Every year we try to give different pshatim, different rishonim. So this is the explanation we'll go with this year. But Yosef can't. God doesn't want it to happen that way. So Yosef can't retain himself. So he reveals himself to the brothers. And he tells them, I am Yosef. So until now he's been sitting in front of them. And he's had like the Arab sheikhs. He's had his face covered. He's had his head covered. All they see are his eyes. And he's talking to a translator, and the translator repeats what he has to say. Now he kicks everyone out of the room. It's him and the brothers. The brothers are about to kill him. They're plotting to destroy Egypt. And Yosef takes the veil off his face, and he says, guys, it's me. I'm Yosef. Suddenly he's talking Hebrew. Till now he's had a translator there. Now that it's him and them, they look at him and they say, what do you mean you're Yosef? So he says, I'm your brother. They say, which brother? So he says, you sold me down to Mitzrayim. Chazal say that Yosef said to the brothers, you guys want your brother, right? You guys want that Yosef. Now there's no one here but me and you. I'll bring the brother before you. So the brothers say, really, where? So he says, Yosef, come on in. The brothers are looking. Which door is he going to come in through? He says, Yosef. He goes to the left side of the room. Yosef, to the right side of the room. The brothers are looking. Where is Yosef going to come in? And then Yosef turns around, takes off his veil and says, it's me, I'm Yosef. So he broke it to the brothers gently, slowly. And the brothers are in shock. What can they say? Yosef starts weeping. And he tells them, now tell me the truth. Is my father still alive? And they can't say anything. After 22 years, they're in shock. What can they say? Yosef says, please, come close. And don't be sad over what happened, because Hashem sent me down here. Hashem wanted me to be here. You see, now Mitzrayim is keeping the world going. There was a godly plan in all of this, and the famine's only been happening for 2 years. I know from the interpretation of dreams that there are 5 years left. So Hashem sent me here to keep everything going. So don't take the credit and don't blame yourself. Hashem made all this happen. And that's why Hashem put me in charge here in Mitzrayim. So quickly go bring dad and tell him that Yosef says, Hashem put me here in charge of Mitzrayim. Please come here. And I'll set you up in the land of Goshen. You'll be close to me. And everything will be okay. I'll support you for the next 5 years of the famine. We don't want you to be totally impoverished. And he says, you should know, just like I'm whole with Binyamin, he had no part in this, so too I'm whole with you guys, buddies. And look, if you don't believe me, I'm Yosef, I'm talking Lashon HaKodesh. And I have a bris milah, just like you guys. He weeps, he hugs them, and the brothers talk to him, and they're talking. And all this conversation is taking place in whispers, because Yosef knows, like any good leader knows, that there are always people listening. So Yosef calls the brothers to the center of the room, and this whole conversation is taking place in whispers. He doesn't want the people outside the door to hear what's going on between him and the brothers. He helps them save face. And nonetheless, they were totally shocked. Chazal tell us, Oy lanu miyom adin, oy lanu miyom atochacha. Woe to us from the day of judgment, woe to us from the day of proof, when God will make us face up with ourselves. We kid ourselves. Chazal say that there are two stages of judgment. Initially, we make all kinds of claims. We come to heaven and God says, why weren't you learning Torah that day? And we say, that day I was busy. I was taking care of this, I was taking care of that. Hashem, you wanted me to take care of all these things. Hashem says, really? You stop taking care of it to take a snack for a half hour. You stop taking care of it to check out the news for a half hour. You stop taking care of those things during the day to do a million other things on the internet that you didn't have to do. So you weren't so busy on that day. Look what you did that day that you're saying you were too busy to learn. Hashem takes us to task with ourselves. Before Hashem takes us to task over what He wanted from us, Hashem says, what do you have to answer for yourself about this, that, and the other thing? And day by day we think we can make claims, and day by day Hashem shows us how we contradict ourselves. That's Yom HaTochacha, the day of proof. Hashem says, I'm not going to judge you based on what I wanted you to do. I'm first going to judge you, I'm going to compare you to yourself. You say that you had to be so zealous over Shechem. Where were you? You had to be so zealous, Shimon and Levi, to save your sister from Shechem, because she's your sister. Where was that zealousness when it came to saving Yosef? There, suddenly you were willing to sell your brother. You sold him down, you were ready to kill him. Where's that brotherly love? If you were so connected to Dina that you killed the whole city for her, where's that brotherly love when you sold your other brother? So Hashem takes us to task. He takes our own actions and places them on the board before us and says, okay, how do you make this claim if you did that? And then we're going to be there standing like Yosef's brothers in utter shame and shock. We have nothing to say. There's a beautiful pshat over here that Rabbi Yort, Rabbi who I still learn by, often quotes, and I think it's a pshat we mentioned many years, and it's worth mentioning again, and it's a pshat that a person has to keep in mind throughout his life, in my opinion. What happened here? Let's take a live interview with the brothers 5 minutes before Yosef reveals himself to them. And we're going to zoom in and interview the brothers and ask them, tell us, What can you guys say? What's going on in your lives right now? And what are the brothers going to say? This is the most tragic day in our lives. We lost one brother, and we're about to lose another brother, and we're down here in Egypt, and the viceroy is very upset with us, and there's a worldwide famine going on, and no one sees the end of it, and we have no money, and we're in trouble back home, and our dad's going to be very upset at us, and it seems like it's all over. Maybe there's going to be a world war now. We're standing here facing off with this Egyptian viceroy, and he's really upset with us now, and it looks like it's all over. In 1 second, when Yosef says two words, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, he takes off the mask and suddenly it's as though the show is over. Okay, it's all been a show, now we can all go home. Right? You guys ever watch a play? You see the play and you get all excited and Beauty and the Beast and now she's going to be taken and who knows what's going to happen. And suddenly, oh, in 1 second the show's over, everything's okay. In this world, we have to know that the same thing can happen. The worst tragedy. The brothers are standing there and it looks like it's all over. Who knows what's going to happen? They're telling themselves, either Binyamin's going to be lost or Yehuda's going to be lost, but it's over. How are we ever going to manage? Yosef, they've already given up hope on. They're never going to find Yosef. And now Binyamin's about to be taken. And if not Binyamin, then Yehuda. Yehuda's offering to be taken instead. It looks tragic. And what's going to be? Maybe Yaakov's going to have a heart attack when he loses another child. Who knows what's going to happen? The whole family is on the verge of collapse, and in 1 second it switches. When we contend with difficulties in this world, we feel at every moment, one can feel like it's all over. How am I ever going to get out of this? The lesson to be learned, one of the lessons to be learned from Yosef, is that when Hashem's running the world, and Hashem's running the world at every moment, all it takes is two words to change the whole scene. In 1 second, the whole scene can change. Very often we can't imagine how. The brothers at that moment, just before Yosef revealed himself, they couldn't imagine how it would change. They didn't know. How are we ever going to get out of this? We have to remember that Hashem is kol yachol. Hashem could do everything. And He's running the world. So there's no moment where a person can despair. At any given moment, the whole scene can change. We don't know how, but we're not running the world, right? So That's I think, a very important lesson. We're not supposed to ever despair. Things can always get better. I often ask myself, Gilad Shalit, what's he thinking out there? Jonathan Pollard. You have people that every moment they feel broken. And when I daven, I mention them in my tefillot. I try to mention three times a day. And not only they should be rescued, but at every moment that they're there in their dungeon, Hashem should give them koach to withstand the test, koach internal strength. Their nefesh should have koach to be able to see beyond the walls that surround them. To be able to have a glance at eternity, a connection with Hashem, a recognition that right now they're in that cell, but there's someone who's controlling the fact that they're in that cell. The difficulties in contending with this world is that we feel like other people can do something to us because they choose to do something to us. The Palestinians, the Hamas, they could all shoot rockets at us because they choose to shoot rockets. If we come to the recognition that every moment is being run by Hashem, and I wouldn't be suffering with rockets fired at my country if not for the fact that Hashem chose, for whatever reasons He knows, that this should be the situation right now. They are Hashem's messengers, but really Hashem decreed it should be such. Shehakol niya bidvaro. Everything happens with God say so. So if the second I recognize that, I have an easier time dealing with things. It's not so easy. So then a person says, well, why? Hashem, why are you doing this to me? So we don't always have answers. But if we recognize that He's running it, and at any moment He could change it, so then that gives us the koach to contend with the difficulties of this world. The brothers are talking to Yosef, and they beg. They say, Yosef, do us a favor. Never tell Dad what happened between us. They don't want Yaakov to know. They've come full circle. When they sold Yosef initially, they convened the court, and Hashem joined their court, and they ruled that Yosef deserves to be killed or sold. And now, 22 years later, they've done tshuva for having done that, and they're completely embarrassed by what they've done. So now they're telling Yosef, please don't tell our father that we ever sold you. According to some Perushim, Yosef never sent word to his father that he was okay, because when he was in that pit, he heard the brothers convene that court and place a cherem. What's a cherem? Cherem is that a court can rule in this world that whoever goes against what we say should drop dead. So they made a ruling. No one's allowed to reveal to Yaakov what we've done on this day, and whoever does should drop dead. So Yaakov doesn't want to go, Yosef doesn't want to go against their cherem. So for 22 years he's out in Egypt, and even when things are good, he doesn't send the word back to his father because he's scared. How's my father going to understand what's going on here? And the truth is, to the day Yaakov dies, Yosef never reveals to him what happened between himself and the brothers. What does Yaakov think? That's a good question. Did Yaakov ever know what happened? Did Hashem ever reveal it to Yaakov? So, I don't know of a place where it says clearly that it was revealed to Yaakov, but there is a medrash that Rashi goes with. There's a medrash that says, how come Yaakov didn't know that Yosef was sold? It says that Vaitabel al beno yamim rabim. Yaakov mourned Yosef for many, many days. When a person's in mourning, when a person is sad, so Hashem doesn't appear to the person. Hashem only appears when a person's happy. Vatechi ruach Yaakov avihem. Yaakov's spirit came back to life when he heard Yosef was still alive. So it came back to life. He got his ruach hakodesh again. He got his prophecy again. And then we might say, even though I don't think it says it clearly in Rashi, we might say that when he got his Ruach HaKodesh again, just like Yitzchak, who continually had Ruach HaKodesh, so through his Ruach HaKodesh, he knew what had happened between the brothers and Yosef. So to Yaakov found out. We find that when Yaakov blesses his children at the end of his life, he says to them, Shimon v'Levi achim, klei chamas mecherotehim, v'sodam al tavo nafshi, b'kalam al techad kevodi, ki ve'apam haregu ish, in their anger, they killed all the people of Shechem, and at their will, they uprooted the ox. What's that talking about? So Chazal learned it, that at their will, they chose to uproot Yosef, who's called Bechor Shoro. Yosef is referred to as the ox. At their will, they chose to uproot him. So that indicates, if we're going with that Midrash, that God did reveal to Yaakov what had happened between the brothers. That when Yaakov regained his Ruach HaKodesh after he heard Yosef was alive, he was happy again. Then God rested on Yaakov again, and then Yaakov knew what had happened. So that shot, that medrash clearly indicates that Yaakov did find out. But in pshat, the brothers begged Yosef, don't tell our father. And in pshat, Yosef never did tell the father. Because after Yaakov dies, in next week's parasha, the brothers come to Yosef and they make up a story. They say, you know, just before Dad died, he asked that we give you this message. Please forgive your brothers for everything they've done. The brothers are scared. Now that the father died, maybe now Yosef is going to take revenge. So the brothers make up a story. They come to Yosef and they say, Dad begged us not. Dad told us to beg you, please, in his name, don't do us any harm. And Chazal say it's a lie. Yaakov never said that, but for the sake of peace, you're allowed to lie. Chazal say, if Yaakov would have known about it, this goes with the pshat that Yaakov didn't know till the day he died, had Yaakov known, he himself would have spoken to Yosef. He would have made Yosef promise, Yosef, don't touch them. Help them out, they're your brothers. Yosef, when they come to him and ask him, please, don't take revenge, he starts crying. He says, why, you think I'm bearing a grudge? Yosef starts crying, he had no such thought. But that goes with the pshat that Yaakov did not know till the day he died. He never knew that story. Yosef was a busy man, and I guess he found his way never to sit and schmooze with his father, and his father never got a chance to ask him, hey Yosef, what did happen with you these last 22 years? Which is a complicated answer, because if Yaakov is living in Egypt, and all of Egypt knows Yosef's history, so where's Yaakov? So you'll say Yaakov's living in the ghetto. He's living in Goshen, so he doesn't get the Egyptian Times. He gets the ghetto newspaper. Maybe. Who knows? Yeah. They didn't want it to evolve to that. They weren't worried Yosef would kill them, but they were worried that now they don't want things to look that way. The brothers have to be unified. We're one people. And in Pshat, everything we said that they were ready to take on all Mitzrayim is Medrash. Pasha Pshat, you don't take on the largest empire in the world. If they were so strong, then why were they here begging for food? So Pshat is not that way. That's a Medrash. Hashem is always with us.
Yes.
But in order for us to be able to get a revelation, in order for us to be able to perceive Hashem's being with us, so there are levels of our nefesh which allow us to perceive Hashem's being with us. When a person attains a level that he is samech b'chelko, he's happy with his lot. He doesn't have to have a lot of money. Could be he's a poor person, but he's really samech, he's really happy with his lot. When a person is koveshet yitzro, so he might not be so strong. He cannot take on an army. He's not Yehuda. But he's a gibor. He's a real strong person. He's taking on his nefesh. When a person is working and he elevates his nefesh on all the different fronts, so then his nefesh can perceive Hashem. We say that there are certain things that a person must have in order to be able to perceive the Shekhinah. And the Gemara enumerates them. And the Rambam says that the Gemara is not to be understood literally. It doesn't mean you have to be wealthy. The Gemara says you have to be wealthy. Yonah was so wealthy, he hired a whole ship to take him out to Nineveh. You have to be a Gibor. You have to be so powerful. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to take these huge poles, talking about poles that are 20 feet high, and he builds a whole building like building blocks. He builds the whole Mishkan. Well, yeah, you have to be very, very strong in order to do that. So the Rambam says, yes, but the Gemara didn't mean literally. The Gemara meant you have to acquire these traits in your nefesh. Sameach, sameach b'chelko. Ashir, ezu ashir, sameach b'chelko. Gibor, ezu gibor, koveshet yitzro. All the traits that the Gemara enumerates, he says, are levels in the nefesh. When you attain those levels, then you can attain the Shekhinah. The Braisa, Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair, tells us that the traits, you build your traits, and as you build your traits, you can attain nevuah. One of the highest levels of building one's traits is prophecy. Prophecy is the level in building one's traits. Well, when a person is sad, so he's gone down from his traits. The Shekhinah, when a person is happy, so his nefesh is open. His nefesh, he's open to perceiving the Shekhinah. So on the one hand, Hashem comes with us and Hashem helps us out in our times of sorrow. But on the other hand, in order for us to perceive Hashem on a higher level, we have to be on a higher level. Part of that higher level is a level of simcha. Now this needs development. What we discussed is on the first level. The second level we'll have to discuss at a different occasion is how could the prophets prophesize bad things about the Jewish people? When the prophets foresaw that the temple would be destroyed, were they happy?
Yeah, lamentation.
Excellent.
It's deeper in sadness.
Right? Jeremiah is prophesizing decades before the destruction. He's describing how the temple will be destroyed and Jerusalem will be destroyed and women will eat their children, they'll cook their children. Was he happy when he was doing that? How could he have prophecy at that moment? So that deserves its own discussion. We discussed it in the past and Bezalel Hashem will still discuss it, but we can't do that tonight.
There are three conditions for the war. It's wealth, throne,
there are many conditions. There are many. That's what I said. There's the whole braisa of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair. The Gemara enumerates those, but the Gemara in Avodah Zarah also enumerates the braisa of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair. Be'ezrat Hashem, we will learn the Ran in our Drashot Ran class. On Fridays, we will get to a Ran which disagrees with the Rambam. The Ran says, no, everything is to be understood literally. You got to have money, not just be happy with your lot.
The three main conditions.
The three conditions, I don't remember what the third is. But those three are not. It's not only those three. Seder, could look it up a different time. It's a Gemara. If you want, I'll look it up then in the class. Yaakov sends, he sends gifts. And when he sends his brothers back, he says, don't fight. Al tergezu badarech. When you're traveling, you got to be careful how you're going. Don't be busy arguing whose fault it is. Sometimes we fight. It's your fault, it's your fault. Yosef tells them, don't do that. Now we got to get you guys down here. He sends gifts. He gives extra gifts to his brother Binyamin. Chazal asked. He himself suffered because there was different treatment between the brothers. How does he give Binyamin extra gifts? So that deserves its own class. I don't have a good pshat in that Gemara. The Gemara gives an answer. I don't understand the Gemara's answer. The Gemara says it was an allusion to the future when Yosef gave Binyamin extra gifts. Still, how does that answer the question? I don't know. And he sends wagons. And when he sends the wagons, so the wagons are an allusion to Yaakov. When I left you, you taught me the important halacha that you have to accompany a person when he leaves the city. Show him you're with him. So now I'm sending you the wagons. The Egla Arufa is where we learn that concept. If a person is found murdered, so we have a whole procession. When we cannot verify who murdered him, and part of that procession, the elders say, we took care of the guy. He didn't come to our city and leave with the feeling that no one was with him. We didn't let him leave without accompaniment. So Yosef was taught that halacha when he left his father. That's what they were busy learning. His father accompanied him and taught him that halacha. Now, 22 years later, he says, Dad, if you don't believe I'm around, here are the wagons to bring you back. We'll continue the same place where we left off. We're continuing to learn. And this teaches us a very important point. Sometimes a guy has to leave Machon Meir. He's called to army duty. He has to go work. He can't show up. Where's his mind when he's not here? Yosef spent 22 years contending with Potiphar's wife, with the jail, contending with all of life's difficulties. He was sold for prostitution. When he was bought by Potiphar, Potiphar meant to take him for himself. God saved him from that. But he was faced with very difficult situations. And yet Yosef's mind was where it had left off. 22 years later, he's still the same Yosef HaTzadik who left his father, and his mind is still steeped in the learning that he left in his father's house. So much so that he could go down to the line, Dad, this is the line we left off on. This is the last line we learned together. A person has a choice. Where is his focus going to be? A person has to work during the day. A person has to deal with his livelihood, with his family, with many things. But a person has a choice. Where is his mind in all of this? A person who wants to overcome life's difficulties has to keep his mind in a holy place. The Brisk Rav, when his son was growing up, so his son would be in the middle of learning and he'd send his son to do different things. And one time his son asked him, he said, Dad, I understand we run an orphanage in the house. The Brisk Rav's house was an orphanage. He got his paycheck. The community funded him. And people who didn't have money to feed their own kids would leave babies at his doorstep. Or children that were born out of wedlock. All kinds of circumstances. His wife literally ran an orphanage in their house. He couldn't learn a word in the house. The Brisk Rav, everyone knows his Torah, should also know his chesed. In his house were a bunch of babies from mothers who didn't have food to give the kids. So in his house, he had many, many babies that no one else would take care of. He took care of them, him and his wife and his children. So his son once asked him, Dad, every time, very often when I'm learning, you send me to do things. How come? His father said, life is filled with disturbances. You have to train yourself that even while you're doing other things, your mind can be in Torah. So that's our job. That, like Yosef, we're doing other things, but where's our mind? Where am I going? David HaMelech was once walking aimlessly and he suddenly found himself in Beis Medrash. He said a song of Tehillim in praise for that. He said, Hashem, you train, I'm so trained that whenever I don't think where I'm going, I end up in Beis Medrash. If I don't think where I'm going, I'm here. A person has to train his mind. Where is my focus? So for 22 years, Yosef's mind is still in the Torah he's been learning with his father. So he doesn't have Beis Medrash. He's got no one to talk Torah with. He's alone in Egypt. But his mind is still there. To the point that when he sends word back to his father, he could say, Dad, I remember the line we were up to in the Gemara. Here are the wagons. That's what we were discussing when I left you. The brothers want to tell Yaakov that Yosef's alive. But they're scared. What's going to happen? An old man, 130 years old, suddenly gets such shocking news. So they send Usher's stepdaughter. Usher has an adoptive daughter. Usher's wife had a first marriage. Her husband died, and then Usher married her. And the Torah calls this stepdaughter Serach, the daughter of Usher. Really, she's not his biological daughter. But because he raised her, she's called the daughter of Usher. Really, she's not. But she's called the daughter of Usher. Her name in all of history is Serach, the daughter of Usher. She's the stepdaughter. He raised her. That here we see an important concept. You adopt an orphan, you raise a child, it's as though he's your kid. You raised him. So Serach, the daughter of Asher, is sent home early. The brothers send her in advance of their coming. And she starts playing music, and she starts singing a song. Yosef's still alive, Yosef's still alive. She's singing the song, and she sings the song, and every few lines she comes back to the chorus, and Yosef's still alive. Yaakov says, Serach, he calls his granddaughter, he says, his step-granddaughter, he says to her, what are you saying such silly things for? She says, what do you mean, you don't believe me? For sure, Yosef's still alive, she continues singing. And she arouses the thought in Yaakov, maybe he's still alive. The brothers come in, and they give the news to Yaakov. Yaakov goes into shock. Vayafog libo. His heart, so to speak, stops. He doesn't, he either faints, he goes into shock. So they talk to him, until finally they can arouse him. Vatechi ruach Yaakov avihim. He accepts the news. He sees the wagons, he gets the message, he accepts the news. Yaakov blesses Serach bas Asher, and he blesses her, she'll live a long life. According to famous Midrashim, Serach bas Asher is still around. She lived hundreds of years, and it's unclear if she ever died. We know that in the time of David HaMelech, she was still around. Shlumei Emunei Israel, the woman who came to David's forces when they were surrounding a Jewish city, there was a rebellion, and the person who led the rebellion, Sheva ben Bichri, ran into a city, so they surrounded the city, and they were ready to kill the whole city out. So an old lady called from the rooftops and said, who's the general? Where's Yoav? I want to have a word with him. And she goes out to talk to Yoav, and she convinces him that that she'll take care of getting the one who led the rebellion out, and she flushes him out. She works with the city people. It's a long story. Bottom line, she is Serach bas Asher. She's still around. She tells Yoav, how many kids do you have? I'm the old woman. I'm the old woman. I'm the one who takes care of the Jewish people. I'm still around. I'm Serach bas Asher. Don't you kill my children here in this city. And then she takes care. She saves the city. So that's this Serach bas Asher. When Moshe has to take the Jewish people out of Egypt, so the morning comes of Pesach, and God says it's time to leave, and Moshe says, wait, we promised Yosef we'll take his bones out. Who knows where Yosef's buried? So they say, oh, Serach bas Asher knows. She's still around from that generation. When Moshe comes to the Jewish people and says, God sent me to take you out of Israel, out of Egypt. We're going to Israel. I'm going to go talk to Paro. We're on our way out. The Jews say, wait, 30 years ago, the people thought it was time to leave, and the children of Ephraim left, and they were all murdered. Who says you're not a fake? We're taking you to Serach bas Asher. They take her to the old lady, Serach bas Asher, who's still around. She's over 200 years old. She interviews him, and she says, he's for real. I have on tradition from the time of Yaakov Avinu that whoever says a double terminology, pakot pakati, God said to Moshe, tell them pakot pakati, use a double terminology, I've remembered you. So that's the tradition they had, that's the code. If you say that code, then you're for real. So no one knew that code, but Serach had that code. So this Serach, that's why she lived such a long life. She gave the news that Yosef's still alive. Yaakov is about to go to Chutz Laaretz. Sometimes when we go to Chutz Laaretz, we feel like, hey, I'm going to Chutz Laaretz, great, I'll go see the Statue of Liberty. When Yaakov goes to Chutz Laaretz, he teaches us how a person should approach a visit to Chutz Laaretz. Yaakov is going to visit. The famine is only 5 years left. After 5 years, he's supposed to come back. He's going on shlichut. He's just gone for a short time. Yaakov doesn't just leave. He takes his whole family to Be'er Sheva. That's the place where God appeared to his father Yitzchak, and he starts davening there. And before he leaves, it's like, before you leave, you go to the Kotel. And he davens and he talks to their Ribono Shel Olam. He's worried. He brings a new kind of korban. The Jewish people have evolved until Yaakov Avinu. The forefathers only brought olos. They only brought sacrifices that were completely burnt. Yaakov has reached the level where he could bring a shlamim. He brings a sacrifice that he eats from. It's the first time a sacrifice is consumed by humans. Until Yaakov Avinu, no one brought a shlamim. But Yaakov's family has reached a new level. Yaakov's reached a new level. And Yaakov is very concerned. Yaakov does not approach this visit in Egypt frivolously. He is aware of the potentials of leaving for Chutz Laaretz. Oftentimes people leave for Chutz Laaretz and they think, I'm just going for Shlichut, I'm going to be a teacher in a day school, I'll teach the children about Judaism, I'll come back in 2 years. How many of those people end up in Chutz Laaretz for their lives, them, their children, and generations to come? Yaakov is aware of the dangers of going to Chutzlaretz. So before Yaakov goes, he goes and brings sacrifices, and he goes and he davens, and he talks to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, how am I ever going to make it back? And Hashem gives him a promise. He says, I'll bring you back.
He didn't know the promise.
So according to Chazal, Yaakov was aware that the Golus is about to begin. Chazal tell us that really what should have happened was, after Avram died, Yitzchak is 70 years old, 60 years old, a group of bandits were supposed to come, and the terrorists were supposed to put Yitzchak in chains and take him down to Mitzrayim, and the Golus was supposed to be there. And Yitzchak spent his life davening that the Golus should not take on that form. And Yitzchak originally was supposed to be called Yitzchak with a sin, because his parents laughed at the news that he was going to be born. Yitzchak, in his prayer, was able to change things from Yitzchak to Yitzchak. The difference in gematria is 210. 210 remained. The first 190 years of the exile Yitzchak took on himself. God told Avram, you should know your children will be in strangers in a foreign land. That was supposed to happen with Yitzchak already. Yitzchak prayed and saved himself. Yaakov wasn't able to keep up. Yaakov erred. He didn't do Kibbutz Avim for 22 years. He was out with Lavan. He erred with his upbringing of his children when he did. He made a difference between Yosef and the other brothers. Yaakov erred, and he accepted Yosef's Lashon Hara when Yosef said bad things about the brothers, and that caused that in Yaakov's time we went down to Egypt. Now Yaakov also, what should have happened according to the original decree was a bunch of terrorists were supposed to come into Canaan, take over Yaakov, take over his children, put them all in shackles and take them down as slaves to Egypt. That's the way it should have looked. But because of Yaakov's davening and because of Yaakov's chus, so Yaakov merited that he went down in honor. He and his children, and when they came down, they were taken down as nobles. Everyone treated them with respect. So Yaakov now goes down to Egypt, and he knows that this is what's going to happen. He knows this is the beginning of the Golus. So the first thing he does is he sends Yehuda to set up Jewish day schools, to set up a base medrash. When people look for a place to live, they have to learn from Yaakov Avinu. You have to go to a community where you have a good shul, you have a good rabbi, you have a good base medrash, a good school for your children. That's critical. Before you decide where you're going to live, verify where you have good education. Yaakov knows if we're going to last, if the family is going to do well, we need good Jewish education. So before he goes down, he sends Yehuda ahead of him. Where are they going to live? In the land of Goshen. The land of Goshen was owned by the Jews. When Paro abducted Sarah, so then Paro, as part of his apology, he gave Sarah the land of Goshen as a gift. So the Jews went to live in the land of Goshen, which was rightfully theirs. Yaakov comes before Paro. And Yaakov suffered a lot in his lifetime. When Paro looks at Yaakov, he sees the man that looks like the oldest man he's ever seen in his life. Yaakov is all of 130 years old. His father Yitzchak and his grandfather Avram lived much longer lives. And they didn't look as old as Yaakov looked at 130. So when Yaakov comes in before Paro, Paro is shocked. He sees a man that looks older than the oldest man he's ever seen. So Paro, who's this midget, is this tall. Paro looks at Yaakov and says, old man, how old are you? So Yaakov says, no, I'm not that old. My forefathers lived longer lives than me, and they didn't look as bad as I look. I look this way because of all things I suffered in my life. I've had a tough life. Yaakov knows that Paro wants his blessing, so he blesses him. And when Yaakov blesses Paro, so the Nile rises. And when the Nile rises, so then all of Egypt has water. All of Egypt has water. They could feed their crops, and the famine is over. So Paro's second dream, Paro's dream that there'll be a famine for 7 years, did not come true. The famine breaks when Yaakov comes to Egypt. When Yaakov blesses Paro, the famine breaks. Hashem promises Yaakov, I will take you out. I will be with you. And this is the concept that wherever we are, the Shekhinah is with us. We have to remember that wherever we are, the Shekhinah is with us. Hashem is with us. And Be'ezrat Hashem, we're waiting for the time that Hashem brings everyone back up. V'anochi alcha gamalo, I will take you up and I will still take you up, Hashem says. It's a promise not only for Yaakov for that door, but for all future generations when they're out in exile. We should merit to see that. B'mehra v'yameinu.